Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
As the wildfires continue to happen in California, a lot of devastation. One of the most devastating fires in the history of the country is happening right now. And we know that there will be an effect on insurance, and there has been some effects already before the fire even started from some insurance companies and the folks who live in that part of the country, and also how insurance rates might be affected around the country, including people who live here. To talk about that with us, the Director of Strategic Communication with the Insurance Information Institute is Janet Ruiz. And Janet joins us now on KMOX. We appreciate your time, Janet. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing good, but my heart just goes out to all those who are affected by the wildfires. It is a tragic time, and we're seeing so much devastation.
What do people not understand? And let's start with just the insurance situation leading up to the wildfires, because our understanding was that a lot of the people who lived there in the weeks and months before this even happened, they were being either denied insurance or their policies were canceled or whatever. What exactly was going on?
So the insurance industry in California, the insurance companies have worked closely with the California Department of Insurance to responsibly insure those folks in California. So if an insurance company had too many policies in wildfire risk areas, they would maybe have sent out a non-renewal notice 75 days before the policy would go out of effect. And in California, we have a private program, not state-run, called the California Fair Plan. They will take all insurance, all people who need insurance in California, homeowners who may have gotten non-renewed. So insurance is available. It is a fire-only policy, so most people got that policy and another one. So insureds got quite a bit of notice and have been able to secure other insurance policies. We do work with the department and have a plan in place, as you suggested, to modernize all the operations and some of the outdated regulations in California that made it hard for insurance companies. They haven't made any profit in the last 10 years. For every dollar that they've spent, they have spent over $1.08 going out in claims and expenses. So we're getting that, you know, fixed as we speak. But we will see most folks did purchase the California Fair Plan, and we will have people that are insured.
Yeah, what I did see with California Prop 103, that is insurance price controls, which every state has some type of insurance regulation, but that California ranks 50th in rate suppression, which goes to what you were saying, that it's just not viable. Insurers are selling below cost, well below rates and risk in California, and that it's they either have to pull out or they have to move that cost to other states that have looser regulation. So that's Harvard Business School study found that if you have looser regulations, like in Vermont, you're paying much higher rates to make up for the stricter regulations in a high-risk state like California.
It doesn't work that way because each state regulates the insurance premiums for that state. So California residents are paying for California losses. So it doesn't actually work that way. What we look at in California is the cost to rebuild. What are the risks, such as wildfire, theft, is your home old? Have you replaced your roof? When we look at a policy in California, that's what we're looking at. So that actually isn't the way it works. It doesn't transfer to other states.
So if you live in Missouri or you live in Illinois, there is no, the people here will not feel the effects when it comes to their home insurance or anywhere else. It's not distributed in any way to them.
No, it is not distributed to other states. And that is because insurance departments are in every state regulating for their state. So they're looking at the risks and the cost to rebuild, et cetera, in each state.
So even a nationwide insurance like State Farm, who's all over the country, they don't spread it out because that's what they think. They think if there are floods and hurricanes in Florida and their rates go up and then these wildfires in California, well, they're just going to distribute that around the country. So it does not work that way at all, you're saying. It's not hidden.
No, it is not hidden. Californians pay for the risk in California, and Floridians pay for the hurricane risk in Florida and all other risks as well. But we do hear that from time to time, and that is incorrect, that we pay for another state. That would mean we were paying for hurricanes, which still are more expensive than wildfires, et cetera.
Yeah,
so
no.
While we're seeing rates go up across the country, it is due to the higher risks that they are facing in their states.
Okay. Yeah, that, and like I said, I can only speak to what just looking into this in the Harvard Business School study. If you're saying that was wrong, that's not how it works. I can only say what I read there. So
I understand.
Is that confusing then? Because obviously with healthcare, we see issues with public health, whether it be knee replacements or obesity, and those issues do drive rates up across the country. So people would probably assume that in some way homeowners and that type of insurance would work the same way. Do they work in very, very different ways?
Healthcare is very different than property and casualty insurance, and has always been. Property and casualty is about replacing buildings and belongings and liability of homeowners for their actions. Those type of things are very different than healthcare. The one part of healthcare that is a part of the property casualty is usually seen more on auto insurance with the medical issues. But auto insurance policies have very low medical limits that get paid out unless it's liability if you're at fault. So that's really the only place. And then workers' compensation, that is another medical type insurance in the property casualty, but that's very regulated as well. So a little different than the overall healthcare industry.
So we are in an area that is unique, and here in the Missouri, Illinois, the bi-state area, one of the things that homeowners are most concerned about would be flooding, because we have multiple rivers and they tend to flood every now and then, and people will have damage or worse when that happens. Are you able to speak to how the insurance industry is going to adjust and how people are going to be affected as the climate continues to be a little volatile and we start to see more and more storms and more surges, you know, not just in, we talk a lot about Florida with the hurricanes and whatnot, but here we have to worry about water. So is it the same kind of thing that we're going to have to, in the future, maybe have to brace for higher premiums and that sort of thing?
Flooding is a big concern all across the country. We even see, like, in the hurricane states, they have flooding, right? So that's different than their homeowners policy. So a flood policy can be bought either through the National Flood Insurance Program or we are seeing many private insurers come back into the flood market whenever they can price things adequately so that they have enough money to pay the claims when the flooding occurs. Then we see more private insurers trying to write in the flood market. We have a lot more sophisticated catastrophe modeling now as time has gone on. And so they can really pinpoint where the larger risks are, what they are. The other key component to it is communities taking precautions, preparing for flooding, you know, putting the necessary money into their infrastructure. And we're seeing a lot of great examples of communities doing that. So the combination of having more private flood insurance and more community mitigation relating to flood, you know, people building their homes up higher, not, you know, having these basements that are filled with living quarters, et cetera. All these precautions are going to go into us being able to be resilient communities when we have these more severe weather events.
Janet Ruiz, the Director of Strategic Communication with the Insurance Information Institute, we appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
That is Janet Ruiz. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
So, and what she says is that you will not be bearing the costs of these wildfires in California.
Yeah, and again, pointing out that hurricanes, right, have cost insurance companies much more than wildfires to date. I think the top 10 most expensive natural disasters have been hurricanes. I don't know. Again, I can only say what I've this is not my area of expertise, obviously. And so I do.
Is it because insurance is boring?
That's the main reason. The Harvard, you know, business school is really interesting looking at how the rates and how there are insurance rates, but then insurance companies have insurance called reinsurance, and reinsurance raises rates, which then forces insurance companies to raise their rates. So I don't know what semantics and what's going to happen. I imagine just with more homes, more expensive homes, and more natural disasters, rates are going to go up no matter what.
In terms of bearing the cost of natural disasters around the country, it's not going to happen in terms of insurance, but it will happen with federal funding. So if the federal government, and I believe it was 100 days or 180 days that the Biden administration has pledged to give 100% to California for these wildfires. But you know what, though? That's fine. Look, if we ever have a natural disaster, whether it's a massive tornado or horrible flooding, which we have had happen here, we're going to expect the same sort of thing. And to me, that's what the government should be for. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji, this is KMOX. We're going to talk to Matt Pauley right after the 11:30 news. We'll talk about the SLU game last night. They lost to Virginia Commonwealth on the road, but Mizzou men's basketball got another huge win, another top five win for them.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that. Illinois gets a win yesterday. So Matt Pauley just after 11:30. And we're also getting closer to the winter warmup, which happens at Busch Stadium and Ballpark Village. And guess where we're going to be, Amy?
We will be at Cardinals Nation Monday, January 20th, MLK Day, at Cardinals Nation, as I mentioned, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Yeah.
A little bit of a different time, an early start for us. But then we're going to, at 11, there's also the inauguration. So we're going to have inauguration coverage. But from 9 to 11, Chris Ranji and I will be at Ballpark Village at Cardinals Nation.
You can come by and say hi to us.
Please say hi.
We'd love to see you. So we probably should touch on the Pete Hegseth hearing that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
He was being vetted by the senators. He is the pick by Donald Trump to be the Department of Defense Secretary.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but we do have some of his questioning yesterday.
can you so casually cheat on a second wife and cheat on the mother of a child that had been born 2 months before, and you tell us you are completely cleared?
Was that wrong? Should I not have done that?
You cheated on the mother of that child less than 2 months after that daughter was born, didn't you?
I tell you, I gotta plead ignorance on this thing.
I have read multiple reports of your regularly being drunk at work.
I've worked in a lot of offices, and I tell you, people do that all the time.
Will you resign as Secretary of Defense if you drink on the job, which is a 24/7 position?
What about the whole Christmas spirit thing? Any flexibility there?
I mean, you're basically saying women, after they have children, can't ever serve in the military in a combat role. It's a silly thing to say.
What do you think? She's one of these feminists looking to get out of the house?
Dude, I didn't know it was going to go like that.
You know,
those are not the sorts of questions and responses I was expecting.
I want to know which senators were laughing in the background. Do you
think that was you?
Well, listen.
What a fun show. I don't mean this.
I was like, I think we're going to hell.
I mean the hearings yesterday. Well, do you think that he bought a cashmere sweater for somebody with a red dot on it just to make up for everything he did wrong?
Wait, what?
Do you not remember that episode?
No.
That's the same episode.
Why do I not
Amy?
Remember that at all? I just remember going, was that wrong?
That's the one where he sleeps with the maid.
On the desk.
In the office, gets in trouble for
yeah.
it. And then he tries to give Elaine that sweater, and it has an imperfection on it, so he got it for cheaper. And he thought, she won't notice the dot. So he gives it to the lady.
Well,
I thought you were a Seinfeld person.
I am. I don't know why I don't remember the sweater, but thanks for pulling that audio. Got to keep up with the nation's capital.
Matt Pauly will join us next. He is our sports fella. He's the host of Countdown to Opening Day, which is on tomorrow night and every Thursday until we get to spring training. Going to be fun. He's next. It is the Chris and Amy show, and it is time to talk to our guy, Matt Pauly. The winter warm-up is coming up. The Cardinals caravan is coming up. It starts on Friday. And we had some good basketball happen last night. Not so much for SLU. We were hoping for a win against VCU. That did not happen. So let's bring in our guy, Matt Pauly. He's the host of Sports Open Line Countdown to Opening Day, which will be tomorrow night. Matt, what's going on?
Not much. How are you guys?
Hey, we're doing great. Let's start with SLU. So that would have been a pretty big game for them had they gotten that win against Virginia Commonwealth, but they didn't look so hot.
No, it was not a great game for them last night, and they've never won in that building. So we saw really good things from them for the first three conference games, but going to VCU and getting a win there was just a little bit much for them.
All right, now let's talk about Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
That is a top five win again.
Yeah.
So they beat Florida last night. They were up by 19 at one point, and they ended up winning that game. It's the second time they've beaten a top five team this year, and for them, that's pretty remarkable. They have not beaten a top five team on the road since 2012. Huge win for Mizzou last night.
Huge, and they certainly didn't get much help from the officiating last night either. There was a lot of things that went against them, and they still found a way to hold on. They're up big at halftime, and then they win. So that's a great win, as you mentioned. You look at their schedule and what they've done this year. They really haven't lost to anybody they weren't supposed to lose to. Maybe you can look at that first game against Memphis. They probably should have won that game, but it was the first game and it was on the road. There are other losses are against Illinois and against Auburn, ranked number 2 at the time, and we see where they're at now. I mean, this is a really good Missouri team, and it was good to see them.
This is just a quick bookkeeping question, Matt. Now, this story came out this morning that the University of Missouri's athletics department had a $15 million budget deficit in the 2024 fiscal year. So they brought in Missouri Athletics $168 mm-hmm. million, dollars, but they spent $183.2 million. This is not unheard of. It's not that it never happened in Mizzou history before. How common is it among big schools like an SEC school to have a deficit? And does this have anything to do with the changing nature of college sports?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I wish I had more of an answer for you. I don't know how common it is. It feels like most programs that are operating at that level generally are profitable, but it's expensive. It's expensive mm-hmm. to run college athletics, and it's getting more expensive by the day. And it's going to get even more expensive because now the NIL stuff, that money is essentially going to be coming from the universities here coming up very, very soon. So it's hard for me to talk about how common this is. I do think $15 million is kind of a drop in the bucket for a lot of athletic mm-hmm. departments. So it sounds like this really big number. I think when we talk about it, we make it a bigger deal than it actually is, but it is notable that essentially they had to take on a loan from the university.
All right, let's move to the Blues, who last night get a win over Calgary, which is good for them. I mean, we're past that halfway point of the season, but the Flames are in front of them in the standings. They are going to need to accumulate as many points as possible because their playoff position is precarious right now. That's a lot of alliteration I just did. So, good win for them.
Really good win. Good win in the sense of like what it stands for. I think you would like to see this team still be a little bit better from an offensive standpoint. They score that first goal within the first minute, and then we don't hear from them again for quite some time. When you look at what this means in the standings, and now they're going to play another game against Calgary coming up, back-to-back home games against the Flames. When you look at the standings and what this means, it's a really important win because they are now back within 3 points of the final playoff spot. Calgary is the final playoff team. They were 5 points back going in, so they would have been 7 with a loss. It feels like, right, I think Colorado is going to be a playoff team. They're the other wild card team. So it feels like, even though there's still a lot of hockey left to be played, it feels like we're getting to a point where it's going to be Calgary, Vancouver, or the Blues. I'm almost mm-hmm. even pushing Utah at this point. It's going to be those three teams contending for that final playoff spot in the West.
Yeah, Chris Kerber was talking about the Blues' position over the next, well, starting yesterday with yesterday's game, over the next couple of games, and said, you could, it's not a huge jump, but you could look at these two games as the trajectory setter for the rest of the season. That so goes the next two or three games, so goes the Blues' playoff chances, which was kind of, that's a lot of pressure to put on those two or three games. But as you mentioned, it's against a team like Calgary. If you're battling for that spot, you can't throw away many points.
No. Again, if they, like, not to make too much of one single game, but Amy, if they lose that game last night, mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly challenging to see a path to the playoffs where, with the win, you still can kind of see it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk some Cardinals here. As I mentioned, the caravan happens on Friday, or at least it begins on Friday. We got the winter warm-up. Amy and I will be at Ballpark Village at Cardinals Nation from 9 to 11. We're going to be broadcasting there. So as we get closer to the winter warmup, it's one of those things where I think a lot of Cardinals fans are just, they love when baseball season happens. There may not be quite as much excitement this year just based on what they've done or what they've not done during the off season. So as we sit here about a month from spring training, how do you feel about where they are?
Not great, because there's still so many unknowns at this point. The Nolan Arenado thing is still hanging out there. They haven't done anything in terms of adding free agents or anything. So I don't feel great. I don't feel great in terms of the team they are, but more importantly, I don't feel great about the fact that they have advanced what they're trying to do in terms of giving young kids runway and being able to just give opportunities to younger players. Now, there's still a lot of time. When I talked to John Mozeliak last week, I knew that he made it very clear that they're still talking to a number of teams and there's still lots of time to get stuff done. And he talked openly about adding to the bullpen, adding a right-handed bat. So there's still things that they want to do. And I think there are going to be things that they do at some point in time. But right now, I don't think there's any reason to feel really good about the offseason, because all they've done is let free agents walk. They just haven't done much of anything.
What's the likelihood of some sort of surprise and I guess significant surprise is what I'm asking here between now and when they have to report?
I don't think high. I think the most that they do is add a piece here and a piece there that can either help in the bullpen or I guess the biggest surprise would be Nolan Arenado walks into camp and they say that, you know what, he's going to be our third baseman. He's going to be our third baseman all season long. We've made the decision that we don't want to trade him. I guess that would be a surprise to me, but I don't think that's even likely. So, no, I don't expect there to be a surprise.
All right, so they are where they are. They're still trying to deal Nolan Arenado. Is there a date that you think they get to, and if he's not gone by then, he's probably just here? Is it spring training? Is it the middle of spring training? How do you look at that?
Trade deadline. Like I'm not being facetious when I say that. I don't think there is, because things can happen.
Before the season starts, do you think it's likely that, or possible even, that he gets dealt once they report to camp?
Yeah, I think that's possible. If an injury happens, at this point, that might even be more plausible depending on what happens, because he's got a very select number of teams that he wants to go to. The Dodgers don't seem to be really interested in him, right? So let's say Max Muncy goes down with an injury in spring training. Well, then all of a sudden, things look a whole lot different when it comes to Los Angeles.
All right. Well, I'm just hoping that they do something here that gets people excited. The problem is I'm looking at the rest of the division and where the rest of the division sits, and it just look, I know it's the Central, anything can happen. I just don't have a ton of confidence that what goes on from, you know, now until the middle of the season is, you know, like I don't know. I want to say that anything can happen here, and it can. I know that's true. But it's really tough when you look at everybody else and what they've done.
Yeah, I mean, look, not a lot has been done in the Central. The Cubs made, you know, a key move in going. But even the Cubs, I don't think the Cubs are world beaters at this point. The Brewers appear to be worse than they were last year. That never seems to impact them. If the Cardinals get major steps forward from Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker, this team absolutely can be contending for a playoff spot. But to me, that's the key thing here. Those guys have to turn into middle-of-the-order run-producing bats, and they haven't been that yet. If they're not that, then I think it's a lot tougher to, you know, even squint and see this thing going the way Cardinals fans would like it to go.
All right, just quick question about some of the football games coming up this weekend. It makes sense. This statement is... It makes sense. It's just plain math, but I hadn't said it out loud. And that was Patrick Mahomes hasn't played since Christmas Day. And he hasn't played a game since Christmas Day. So it will be, I think.
So he's going to suck now, right?
Well, it would be 25 days between, you know, starts for him. Does that matter? Is it more of a good thing because he had a hurt ankle? Or does it mean you could lose some sharpness?
It doesn't have zero impact, but I think the impact of getting healthy and not playing in games since then, outweighs any negatives of there maybe being some rust when the game gets started. This is the Chiefs. This is Patrick Mahomes. This team knows how to flip the proverbial switch when they need to. Again, it's going to be a home game. So, again, I'm not saying it has zero impact. I think it's a really, really legitimate question for sure. But I don't – I think the decision that the Chiefs made on not playing Mahomes and some other players in the final couple weeks and having the bye week last week, it's going to be – that's the positives definitely outweigh the negatives.
I think we talked about this, right, where there were people upset with them. Really, it was just Bengals fans who were upset with them for not – playing their starters in the final game of the season because they were resting them like any other team does. That's stupid, right?
It's beyond dumb. You worry about yourself first. I think I said this before. If Kansas City in that game would have been at the 1 yard line with in a game that they were losing by three and they took a knee to lose purposefully and get Cincinnati out, well then that's a different circumstance. But they didn't do that. Cincinnati was not on their mind when they made the decisions that they made. All they cared about was getting themselves right. Yeah, no, it's anybody who thinks that's a thing, I don't think completely understands sports.
All right, so they will play at 3:30. on Saturday. There are two games on Saturday, Chiefs and Texans, and then the Commanders and Lions play at 7. I know we have the Chiefs broadcast, so or the game. We will have the game here on KMOX if people want to listen in. So, in fact, I believe we have that game, and if they make it to the AFC Championship, we'll be airing that one as well.
Yeah, we have everything up until the Super Bowl when it comes to the Chiefs. And then I don't know, you know, like this past weekend we ran the Saturday games. I'm not sure what else we have this weekend. What we do.
You got Sports Open Line tonight, short show before women's basketball, St. Louis University women's basketball. What do we have tonight, Matthew?
Steve Weiss is going to be on the program for a little bit.
Steve Weiss?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I like Steve
Weiss. He's going to be on this evening, so we're looking forward to that. And yeah, we got about 45 minutes. We'll see what else we have up our sleeve before all is said and done.
Go get him.
All right.
Yo, Paulie, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
Steve Weiss, NFL Network.
There you go.
It's a big dog.
There you go.
So that'll be tonight, 6 o'clock to 6:45. As Matt mentioned, there is women's basketball tonight. They take on G-Dub. You know what G-Dub is, Amy?
George Washington.
That is right. Do you realize, Amy Markscores, that today, January 15th, 2024, it has been 16 years since Chelsea Sullenberger.
Sully?
Sully Sullenberger landed that plane in the Hudson River.
16 years.
I'm Sully. Sully Sullenberger.
Do you...
So I
saw that this morning. In fact, we had a text message, and we appreciate all your texts at 314-436-7900, who mentioned that, and I thought, 16 years.
Yeah.
There's no way. Doesn't it feel like it was 5 years ago?
5 years ago feels right. And when you go back and you look at what Sully did and landing that massive airliner on the Hudson and how he had to keep the nose of the plane up to the very, very last second and how the plane had to be even because if one wing touched the water before the other wing, the plane would absolutely crash and rip apart.
Or the tail or the nose. Or it had to be perfectly level.
It's actually amazing.
It's one of the most miraculous things that anybody has ever done.
Miracle
because
on the Hudson.
How many times have you ever seen a commercial airliner or that you know of crash into water and it's not a crash? We knew those planes floated, but that was the first time that I've ever actually seen it.
Man,
like those planes are designed to float on water.
They just very rarely get a chance to float.
No, because they all just go down.
There's not a lot of plane floating that you see. That's amazing.
You ever seen the SNL sketch with Tom Hanks and...
No, but just you talking about it, I was giggling.
And Alec Baldwin.
No.
And the premise of it is it's Sullenberger's first flight after all of that happened. And he's still, you know, he's still tasting himself, right? Yeah. Like, and he's sitting in the first chair and Alec Baldwin comes in and is like, he's the other pilot. He's like, no, actually I'm first chair. And so he gets all salty about it. Like, how dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you take Sully out of the chair?
Good morning, folks. This is your captain.
And I'm Sully.
Should be a pretty smooth ride today.
Hero of the Hudson.
Weather in Seattle is 77 degrees, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the flight.
Brace for impact. Just kidding.
Such a good sketch.
Pretty good. Hey, speaking of celebrity actors, Brad Pitt. Okay, apparently there's a new scam of a Brad Pitt impersonator or multiple Brad Pitt impersonators messaging fans for money, saying this is Brad Pitt and apparently, like, I think you're attractive and so forth and so forth. A French woman fell for this scam so hard, she ended up losing her marriage. She divorced her husband and lost $850,000.
No way. There's no way.
Yeah.
So Brad Pitt is asking her for money, and she believed that Brad Pitt needed her money?
Yeah.
What was he saying? Was he saying, Angelina took it all, I'm destitute, I need your help?
So it says
there's just no way that's
true. She was a 53-year-old French interior designer named Anne, and she detailed her experience on France 24, which is one of their news stations. And she said that she said it at first, the figure reaching out to her claimed to be Brad Pitt's mom.
What?
And saying, "My," she told, quote, "she told me that her son needed someone like me."
And also $800,000.
Well, yeah, she said the scammers told her that Brad Pitt needed funds to cover his kidney treatment, which he couldn't pay himself.
Really?
Because of his divorce proceedings were freezing all of his bank accounts. So to convince Anne that the real Brad Pitt was behind the account, the scammers sent doctored and AI-generated images of Brad Pitt in a hospital bed saying,
"All right,
see, this is me."
All right.
And she said, quote, "he knew how to speak to a woman."
Okay, okay. Okay. All right. So Brad
That's
Pitt.
That's awful. And she's like, "why did they pick someone like me?" I'm like, I think because you're
well,
dumb
clearly,
enough to fall for it.
So Brad Pitt is worth an estimated $400 million.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Angelina has half of that,
yeah,
he still has $200 million. I don't know how much a kidney surgery is.
Yeah.
It's not $200 million, no. Though it's definitely less than that.
So a spokesperson for Brad Pitt said, "it's awful that scammers take advantage of fans' strong connection with celebrities, but this is an important reminder to not respond to unsolicited online outreach, especially from actors who have no social media presence."
<That's>
I feel like that's a little shade.
That is so awesome.
Yikes. That's
I mean,
sad.
Not awesome. 800,000.
So and her marriage.
Did she get the money back or no?
I don't know.
Although, listen, if it really was Brad Pitt, you got to leave your husband for Brad Pitt.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, right?
Yeah.
Sean Malone has been covering some city-specific issues like the Rams' settlement money. Also had a conversation with Police Chief Robert Tracy. We're going to talk to Sean Malone.